The 8:30 agenda item, standardized bycatch reporting methodology. I'll turn it over to Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have just a brief summary of what's been happening with the committee, and Mike Petney over there, Petnoy, is going to give a brief rundown of where we are and possibly answer some questions. All of the materials are on the tab 11 in the council binder, and we've had two public hearings on the draft amendment and since the last council meeting. The FMAT met December the 4th in Gloucester, and in the package there's a letter to FATCA regarding quarterly bycatch, and the summary of comments from the draft amendment and the summary of public hearing and the written comments. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I will turn it over to Mike for some technical explanation, and I think there'll be some comments after that and possibly a recommendation for a motion. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The purpose of the agenda item today was really twofold. The first was the original timeline that we had for the development of this amendment had us bringing the final amendment before the council for final approval to submit to the secretary for review and implementation. We're not there. We're not ready for that step yet. We have some more work to do, which I'll talk about in a little bit. And I just didn't want to have it not be on the agenda and have people wondering where things stood with the amendment. So I thought I'd give a brief update of the comments that we received during the public comment period, touch real briefly on the types of changes that we're making to the document based on the comments, and then that's basically that's all we're planning to do. This was really just intended to serve as an update for the council. We're not expecting any council action, although there might be a couple of issues. One was mentioned yesterday that came up at the executive committee that may require council action. So, as Dana said, we published the draft SBRM amendment on November 1st of last year after it was approved by this council and the Mid-Atlantic Council. We had an open comment period through December 29th. We held two public hearings during that time, November 14th in Gloucester and December 13th in New York, and those were both in conjunction with council meetings. 48 people attended the two hearings. 9 people spoke and gave comments at those hearings. In addition to the public testimony, we received 7 comment letters, 2 individuals, 3 conservation groups, 1 letter on behalf of 6 fishing organizations, and 1 letter endorsing the previous letter on behalf of the fishing organizations. Some of the letters were from the same people that spoke at the hearing, so there was some duplication of comments, but not all. In general, most of the comments suggested that more work needed to be done on the amendment. What varied among the comments was how much work, how substantial revisions were being suggested. There was definitely some confusion and concern over the use of the importance filters. Though several commenters supported their use, it was clear that not everybody fully understood what their purpose was. Several commenters suggested that an EIS should be prepared rather than an EA, and that particular issue drove a lot of specific detailed comments within their letters. In particular, providing sufficient opportunity for public participation in the process, the analysis of indirect and cumulative effects, and the range of alternatives considered. Several comment letters expressed concern that the amendment as it was currently written, would not satisfy the court order. In particular, there was some concern or confusion over whether the amendment currently left observer coverage levels to the RA's discretion. There was several people stressed the need to make observers mandatory, and concern that the amendment did not specify how the data would be collected or handled by the observers. One comment letter focused in part, although it drove a lot of their following comments, on the balance between specificity and generality in the amendment. They were concerned with the overstratification, as they called it, overstratification of fisheries being too specific, while the uniform CV standard was too general. The commenter suggested that the SBRM amendment instead should create a framework and a process and direct each species committee to develop fishery-specific monitoring systems under each FMP. There were comments regarding the relationship between the CV performance standard and the observer coverage level. Several comments suggested that the SBRM be adaptable to changing conditions in the fisheries. Some comments were concerned with the treatment of accuracy, while other comments commended the treatment of accuracy. Several commenters supported the position to not implement electronic monitoring at this time. And there was a technical review appended to one of the comment letters, which raised several concerns about the analytical, basically the analytical underpinnings of the amendment. And those will be that those technical comments will be reviewed by the Science Center and handled that way. There were several comments concerned with the implications of funding limitations on the ability of the agency to fully fund the required observer coverage levels. And there were also a number of more minor comments that were basically seeking clarification or better explanations of some of the points discussed in the amendment. And as Dana pointed out, behind tab 11, you can find summaries of the two public hearings, which go into more detail on a lot of the testimony we received, as well as the hard copies of the actual comment letters we received during the public comment period. Now, based on those comments and discussions with the FMAP, we'll be making several changes to the amendment between what was in the draft and what you'll see, we hope, in April. Principally, we'll be making some clarifications throughout the document to address the comments that we received and reduce some confusion, I think, that that people have or misunderstandings about what the amendment does. We're going to try to clarify how the CV performance standard is used to establish observer coverage levels. We'll expand the discussion and explanation of the importance filters. I think we'll be restructuring the importance filters to address some of the comments that we received, the specific comments we received on the importance filters, and better explain the approach to filter out the lower importance cells. And there'll be a specification of the particular thresholds that will be applied. We'll be making changes to the SBRM to make it frameworkable, essentially, so that all FMPs could use framework adjustments to change the CV performance standard, the means by which data are collected, and the mode stratification. We will be stipulating the process or a process for the councils to develop a prioritization in years in which the budget is insufficient to fully fund the observer coverage levels and revising the analysis to develop the observer coverage levels. I think we spoke about that, or some good comments were received on the analysis that is used to specify those numbers. And that's, as I said, a real brief summary, just to give the council an idea of the work that we're currently undertaking on the amendment and the types of comments that we received. I don't know if at this point you want to bring up the other issues.
Yeah, I'll open it up to questions from the council. And, Mike, what do you think the next step is? What the timing of the next step will be? Will we see SBRM again in April, or is it going to be more like June?
The plan is to have it in April. I think one issue in particular that's that would, I think, make the process go a lot smoother is if we could have one or two committee meetings. At the November council meeting, it was agreed that there wouldn't be any SBRM committee meetings. It would be function as a committee of the whole, but I think given the need to go through these comments in more detail and spend an adequate amount of time, going through the comments and understanding the changes that are being done to the, that need to be done to the amendment, I think it would be really useful, particularly given the joint nature of the amendment with the Mid-Atlantic Council. It would be useful to have an SBRM committee meet for a day and go through this in more detail.
I can understand that need. Does the service have funding to support us putting a committee together?
No.
Okay. All right. Any other questions from the council? John Nelson and David Pierce.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mike, I think I'll, do you think that clarifications and refinements that you have outlined that you want to do to the amendment will address what some of the concerns are that have said that that presently, anyways, it doesn't satisfy the court order, which specifically I think people are looking at numbers, set numbers of reserver coverage, and does the service feel that, you know, the changes that you think you can put in there will address that type of issue?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I've gone through, you know, some of these issues with Gene, who's not here quite yet, and George Darcy. We've talked about the issues. We've talked about the court order and what's required, and we feel that the clarifications and the changes that we plan to make will clarify for people that the document does, in fact, meet the court order.
Dr. Pierce.
I'm glad to hear that you will be revisiting the filters. That is, you'll be addressing the importance of the filters and restructuring the filters, better explaining the approach. That is extremely important to me. My question is, will you be addressing the concern that has been expressed by a number of commenters? And this is a concern that I share regarding the sampling for bycatch in high-volume fisheries, for example, the sea herring fishery or the mackerel fishery. I think there was some concern expressed that that the way in which the filters are described right now, we might not have adequate sampling of these high-volume fisheries. So will you be focusing on that particular issue?
I think there's two issues wrapped up in that. The first is, Based on the data that are analyzed to determine the variability of the discard data that come in from the observers, using the process that we're trying to establish with this amendment to determine what levels of observer coverage are required, you can see, you know, that process exists and it can be generalized across all fisheries. The specific issue with the high-volume fisheries has more to do, I believe, with the actual sampling protocols that the observers use while they're on the vessel. And we're not addressing sampling protocols because that's something that's dealt with within the observer program. And they have sampling protocols which vary by type of trip, type of fishery. And those are all explained in the observer program manual, the biological sampling manual, and the addenda to those documents. I think we had a conversation at one of the earlier SBRM committee meetings with Dave Potter from the observer program office and talked specifically about sampling in some of the high-volume fisheries and sampling for some other species that are harder to distinguish, like river herring.
Yeah, I understand the two separate issues. Once you get on board the vessel, how do you sample the catch to make sure you're identifying how much bycatch there is and the nature of that bycatch? And certainly the sea sampling program is working very hard to address that issue, and they've already made some strides to improve that sampling protocol. My question was specific to the amount of trips that would be sampled in these high-volume fisheries and to make sure that whatever filter was adopted, it's one that would enable us to get, a large sampling of those high-volume fisheries. That's the concern that I have, and that's been expressed by many, many other individuals, and I think it's even more important now. The issue is even more important in light of the, you know, the nature of the sea herring fishery. New vessels on the scene, you know, the at sea processing that's occurring with the large domestic at sea processor, and then of course mackerel too. So if you're addressing it, it seems, and that satisfies me.
Sally McGee.
Yeah, maybe I didn't quite catch the full gist of this, and maybe it's just my own desire to try to figure out how to deal with lack of federal funding for the Observer program. But can you talk a little bit more about what the intent is now in the amendment to find other sources, industry funding for the Observer program? That might just be me assuming that's what the answer is. I don't know if that is something that is suggested to be included in the amendment, or if there are other sources, bake sales and whatnot, that might help make up the difference. But can you just talk about that a little bit more? That was one of the issues that you raised.
Yeah, there's a couple of, well, I have a couple of different tracks on that response. The first is, you know, one of the issues in the court order, or the opinion stemming from the lawsuit, was we can't use budgets to develop the methodology. So we can't say, oh, we've got $2 million this year, this is how we're going to, you know, allocate, this is how we're going to collect bycatch data. So we tried very hard in this amendment to be essentially budget blind and create the idealized Observer, you know, allocation methodology. But we recognize that budgets do not always cooperate. We don't have control over the budgets. We don't have the ability to necessarily always have enough funds to fully cover everything that would be required under the methodology that we establish. So then the question is, well, what do you do in those years in which there is a budget shortfall? And clearly the court said that the Observer coverage levels should not be left to the discretion of the RA. So we need another way to determine how we're going to prioritize the available funds. So what we realize is not clear in the document, and could be clarified or should be specified, is what process do we use in those years in which funds are insufficient? And what, we haven't had a committee meeting, so I haven't had the benefit of discussing this through with committee members yet. But basically coming back to the councils in those years with the available budget and the coverage levels that we could fund, and asking the councils to prioritize the top 3, 4, 5 fisheries that they would like to fully fund, recognizing that that will result in, you know, less precision in the data for the remaining lower priority fisheries. Another approach that the council could agree to is simply to have a reduction in across the board. So if we have 75% of the funds we need, you could simply fund each fishery at 75% of the numbers of the coverage levels that come out of the methodology, or you could, as I said, pick some number of priority fisheries, fund those at 100% level, and then reduce the coverage levels for the remaining ones. Or the council could use that as a driver to develop a mechanism for industry-funded Observer coverage. And, you know, that gets to the second part of, I think, where you're going, that was brought up. My understanding is was brought up at the executive committee, and we'll be talking about it after we get done with the questions on my presentation.
Dave Gaethel.
Hey, thank you. My question, Mike, is, I've read the comments from everybody very carefully. I've tried to read the document carefully. It's not an easy document to read. And I personally believe that the two sides in this debate will never agree on an appropriate level of Observer coverage. Some people will never be satisfied unless they have 100% coverage, and some other people feel that any level above 3 or 5% is a waste of money. So given that the two sides are never going to agree, and given that the document is essentially a mathematical treatment of Observer coverage, if you follow it down through, it's a mathematical treatment. You take the various steps, and at the end, you come out with a number of trips that need to be observed. What I'm interested in because it's just me, I guess, is I like to see things, make sure they pass the common sense test. That, you know, we don't just treat something mathematically and at the end come up with a number that makes no sense. So what I'm, my question is, what is the feedback loop here once this document goes into effect? So, for example, we observe a fishery. We take a certain number of trips. We really don't see any change in the discard rates or the bycatch rates from previous years. Do we just continue to blindly pour observers into this to satisfy some mathematical number and take some enormous number of trips when we really don't see any change and therefore are essentially wasting our money, versus a fishery where we go out, make a few trips, and we observe a radical change in the discard pattern from previous years? Is there some way that you're going to be able to internally shift people when we don't need 8,000 trips in this fishery because we haven't seen anything different versus this one over here where now we may have to intensively sample it because we do see a radical change? I'd like to know what the common sense feedback loop is here.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I say that because I think I have a good answer for it. I think you're pointing out one of the reasons why the FMAT in particular has favored the approach of using CV, a measure of precision, of the data collected, rather than an across-the-board percent coverage level, like a 20% of trips. Because when you do have changes in, when you do start to see consistency in the discards in a fishery or sudden changes in the discards of a fishery, what you're really talking about is what's happening to the variability of the data. And as the variability goes down, you get more consistent discards across the board in a fishery, the CV comes down because the precision improves. And as that CV comes down, when it feeds into the mathematical formula, the number of observer days that you need to maintain the desired level of precision also comes down. But when the CV jumps up, in other words, the precision gets very poor because the variability is suddenly increased, then that would automatically, through this process, increase the number of sea days you would need to observe in that fishery in order to maintain the desired level of precision. So there is that feedback mechanism on an annual basis, and that's part of the reporting process that's included in this amendment, is how frequently, there's two aspects to the reporting. The first is how frequently does the council want to get comprehensive information on discards and on the effectiveness of the SBRM. But the process used by the center on an annual basis to determine the required coverage levels will use this process on an annual basis. And so the optimization protocol, the SBRM methodology, will annually update using the CV, the precision standards, to determine the coverage levels in each fishery. So as those situations occur, the process will automatically account for those in the coverage levels that are required.
Okay, thank you. That's great. I think we need to somehow stress that, because I get the sense from reading the comments from both sides here that the commenters didn't understand that aspect of the program. And I think that's led to a lot of the comments that were made, is this fact that they didn't really understand the feedback loop and how it would be applied.
Right. No, I agree. I agree 100%. I think that's one of the reasons why it's really useful to have that kind of comment period to get other people to look at the document. And you can see what people are getting from, you know, you put the words on paper, they make sense to you, and you send them out there, and you get responses that tell you what people aren't understanding. And that was one of the things that definitely needs to be clarified.
Okay, anyone else on the council? Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to try to get something straight now. What I heard was that Mike is actually supporting, and which I support, the committee revisiting this issue. The committee still stands, as far as I'm aware, both Mid-Atlantic membership and New England. But if I heard it right, because of the funding issues, there may not be an opportunity for this committee to meet again, which it would make the FMAT team by de facto the only group that had the opportunity to comment on it, who is responsible for its development. So if we're going to keep this in the public's eye and have public participation, which is evident in these comments, these comments generated a lot of concerns that a lot of us on the committee missed. This thing was a lot to digest in a very short time frame. And I'll be perfectly honest with you, I wasn't able to follow it through its entirety at all. I just felt like I was a step behind with it. But the comments bring it back into perspective. And I would certainly support some way that the committee has the opportunity at some level to comment on this, other than through just the normal council voted up or voted down. But if the committee doesn't meet again, it'll be finalized by the FMAT team, presented to the councils for a final vote. I don't see no other option. So if there's any way that, a committee meeting could take place in conjunction with a council meeting to minimize the cost, it certainly looks to me like it should be something that both councils consider, because there is a lot for the committees to talk about now through the comments generated through the comment period. So I would certainly support any opportunity for that to happen. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. We're going to try to figure something out, obviously. Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mike, there's another aspect of discard data, and that's the scientific aspect. I think out of some 30-something species that we manage, only a handful consider discards in the stock assessment. And if we do consider discards in stock assessments, we're liable to get, different fishing mortality rates, different status of the stock. So when we, in the future, do some type of prioritization, we should make sure that when we do it, hopefully annually, to look at what's happening in the science community in terms of assessments and what we're doing in management, that we prioritize based on both management and science.
John Nelson, then I'm going to go to the audience.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on Dave's comment, and I think a little bit on Paul's, Mike, you've mentioned that it's going to be an annual review. Is there any flexibility to address concerns that, every year something's going to pop up as far as concerns about some fishery because of reports of high discards taking place? And if you've got a set number because you've evaluated for the past year's data, you may not be able to adjust that. But is there some mechanism to react to this type of reporting that we find credible? Let's use that, and then try to increase a little bit here at the expense of an area that probably is reaching its precision or is close to its precision, of which I think is the right way of doing it anyways, doing it by the precision basis.
Yeah, I think that, what we're trying to set up is a system that's flexible enough that it can both be adaptable to changing council priorities and management programs and changing conditions in the fishery. So there is the automatic feedback loop, which I spoke about, although there would be a temporal delay in that, because you're always going to be looking at past year's data. And if you're getting information that you're suddenly seeing a spike of discards in a fishery that hasn't yet been reflected in the observer data to incorporate into the process, I think nothing would prevent the council from raising that on and requesting that additional coverage be provided to that fishing mode, and it's probably going to be, would be one of these above the line, below the line issues. If you're going to increase coverage in one fishing mode, you need to pick a couple lower priority fishing modes to decrease coverage in, recognizing the implications of that. And I think that information could be provided and incorporated into this feedback loop. The other mechanism would be, as I said, we're trying to build into this framework the ability to use framework adjustments and annual specifications and such to make modifications where appropriate, and that could be things for such a, you're developing a new special access program that would essentially create a new fishing mode, and you want to request that be incorporated into the SBRM, and you might even set an initial target level of observer coverage. I talked with Tom Neese about depending on how the observer data might be used in a particular fishery, you might want a higher level of precision. And so you might use a framework adjustment or an annual process to change the CV standard in a particular fishery depending on the needs, the management needs of those data.
Just thank you. Just to follow up, I think what you were saying, though, was still reflective of the of an annual process. The council looks at it and says, well, we've got reports during this past year that we want to have this Fishery X monitored more closely because it's we've gotten a lot of reports of high discards. I was wondering whether or not there could be a more timely response, and that's an in-season change. Does it provide that flexibility? And if it doesn't, it's just I want everybody to realize that that's, you know, you're set for the year, and that's where it really has to stay because there's not really any flexibility of dealing with it other than the next annual evaluation in which you can then put more effort into that particular fishery.
Yeah, I don't think that this needs to be real to spelled out, you know, step by step in this amendment, because what you're really talking about is just council, you know, the council's right to say, hey, we're concerned about a particular fishery, we're getting some reports, can you increase observer coverage for the rest of the year, you know, next quarter, and if there's funds available to do that, and those funds are made available, I'm sure the center would at least look at increasing observer coverage for the rest of the year. If there are other provisions that need to be considered, that's going to be more complex. But and one of the things I think that Paul is going to bring up is the frequency of reporting out on discard data, and whether that's an annual process or some other time period, which may help address your concern as well.
Okay, take a few comments from the audience if they exist. Anyone from the audience? Dave Frula?
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund, and I'm also commenting in this matter on behalf of the Associated Fisheries of Maine, North Carolina Fisheries Association, Garden State Seafood Association, Montauk Inlet Seafood, and American Pelagic Association. We've submitted extensive comments and tried to summarize them in a document for the council. I think it's great that this is going back for further work. We very much hope that the committee will have a chance to revisit the SBRM and see if something that's actually adaptable and fits management needs can be created. I'm afraid that I'm still not hearing from the changes that there's going to be some ability for the species-specific groups to, at the initiation of this observer process, figure out what the management needs are and tailor the observer coverage accordingly. I hear the framework might be used, but it sounds like if you have a new program, I can't say much more than that other than to say we're still concerned. We await development of whatever a refined document is. I hope the council, as Mr. Rule said, doesn't just get to vote up or down on this. We had Paul Starr, who's a fisheries scientist who does a lot with observer programs, submit a four-page comment letter. It's in your folder. I hope you've read it. Again, we've summarized our short comments. I also want to hope we're careful with this feedback loop and that we really expect it to be something that's responsive. One situation that we see in this, and Dan Cohen's letter sets it forth, for scallops, you're looking at doubled, quadruple, maybe more observer coverage to try to find turtles in scallop dredges that have chain mats on them now. I mean, you are now looking for the rarest of rare events because you're excluding them. And then to have 8,000 observer days to do that? I mean, someone's going to need to focus on what makes sense, and it needs to be focused on in an inherently practical way as opposed to just a math exercise. And again, I think the committee is the right place to do that. Hopefully both committees will get to meet once we've seen another iteration, because I don't want to rail about something that may be changing. But thank you very much. And this is an important issue, and it's going to be very important.
Ron. And Dan, I think I saw your hand. You're on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. What's missing in this process now is that we do not have a public process for technical input and review. It's not good to just be able to come up to a microphone at a committee meeting and express a concern. There needs to be a forum where the various stakeholders can meet with the scientific people and discuss the technical details. One example, you're facing a lawsuit now from Oceana about the observer coverage in the elephant trunk area regarding the chain issue. To me, we don't have a technical forum where we could sit down and discuss this. We have either an FMAT process or we have the Science Center, but we do not discuss these things at a PDT. Actually, the various stakeholders cannot even comment at a PDT meeting in the way we're structured now. We have to figure out a system where the technical experts across the host spectrum can meet and work out the details. And the devil is in the details with bycatch, observer, and reporting coverage. I would really strongly suggest that the various PDTs be tasked to provide input on the various programs by FMP, in the development of this document, or else it's going to be vague and you're going to have a lot of problems downstream. Thank you.
I'll try to be brief. I just want the council and NIMS to really think seriously about first what the goal of the observer program is, which is primarily to observe an action that goes on repetitively sufficiently so that you can characterize its impacts. And basically all you're looking for is coverage sufficient to understand what happens on a repeated basis. You know, if you think about this from a practical point of view, think of other things you might characterize. How often people stop at traffic lights when it's red or go through the traffic light. How often you need to characterize, you need to observe it. I mean, one of the things that was pointed out a little bit by Dave is that what now is happening is really counterintuitive. The less frequently something happens, such as capturing a turtle in a scallop dredge, if you wanted to, if it happened never, to be certain, you'd have to observe it 100% of the time. And we have to look at the practical implications of this. Right now, the document as written is calling for actually four times the observer coverage as currently was experienced in 2004 in the scallop fishery. And again, let's look at the practical impact right now today. Example, today we have an observer program in the scallop fishery where right now any boat that's scalloping today is almost getting a ton of coverage because it seems like NIMS has excess observers, very few people are out, you have to call in. The practical, right now, today in the open areas, people are averaging about 700 pounds to 800 pounds a day, and it's costing us $775 for an observer. So it's actually $1 per pound is a practical impact if you have an observer on board the boat. And it's really, really very hard for fishermen to actually make this economically viable. So I want to make sure you put in perspective that, I mean, one of the things that's in your executive committee reports is even discussion that maybe the SBRM will start looking at, well, maybe we have to have set-asides in all fisheries to pay for observers. I think you're really almost heading towards a train wreck. If you tax the fishery to the extent, if you read your document SBRM, it says that your default could be as high as a 50% observer coverage in fisheries. And I don't know how far you've read the document, but there's one comment in there that says, default, if I understand it, would be a 50% observer coverage. Does anyone practically think you need to have 50% observer coverage to understand what is happening repetitively? I don't think so. I should stop. I don't want to take long. I want to address other issues today. I hope that this has been a wake-up call, that we've got to achieve the public objective, which is to understand what bycatch happens in a fishery. but we've got to do it in a manner that makes sense. And the last comment about that also is, you know, the public has previously, especially since you see Congress funding it, perceived that there is some value to observers other than just for the specific fishery. I think Paul mentioned a little bit also, but the overall in terms of taking samples, et cetera. So is it, does it make, should we go from the point of view immediately that says the fishermen should pay 100% of the cost of something when there's also other public purposes being met? I don't know how to answer these questions, but I do think that if we just say this is a technical amendment, let it go through, we're going to bear very bad fruit in the long term. So I think before we rush headlong, we've got to make certain we do it correctly. Thank you.
Back to the council. Paul Howard.
Well, there's a couple issues, Mr. Chairman. The first one, there is a report requirement in the SBRM that requires a discard report, one annually and one every 5 years, I think. So if you look in tab 11, item number one, there's the council may want to consider, and it would need a motion, that the SBRM amendment add a quarterly report by gear, by statistical area, by fishery. Now, a quarterly report, I think, is needed to look at our SAP programs, to look at our ecosystem approach to fisheries with interactions between scallops and groundfish, herring and groundfish, and any number of species, whiting and herring, et cetera. So if the council wants to look at another alternative to vote on that calls for a quarterly report, it would need a motion. And that would be the first thing to discuss, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone want to make that motion or a motion to that effect? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, I would move that we add a requirement to the SBRM that quarterly reports by gear, by statistical area, by fishery be provided.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Prupp. In discussion? Dave Gaethel.
Is there anybody here from the Observer Program that can comment on the feasibility, practicality, whatever of this? I mean, is it doable as they're currently constituted with the staff they have?
Frank.
Frank Almeida, Deputy Director. There are people from the Observer Program here. But we've actually talked about this. It's possible to do, but the first thing people need to understand is that the data aren't even available for several months after the trip is back. So a quarterly report could be possible, but we're talking about a quarterly report that might be 6 months or 9 months back. A lot of the data is already available on the website, so that we can develop reporting methodology that will allow these reports to be created. But we need to understand that the main thing is that these reports will be 6 or 9 months out.
Pat?
I'm going to oppose the motion, and not because I have any problem with working towards getting this information to the council on a regular basis or having us review it on a regular basis, but I just think things like quarterly reports are make work. And unless the council intends and has some sort of system that, in fact, uses quarterly reports, then it's just more paper that we get at the council meeting without any real purpose. So I think the reports themselves need to be tied to some sort of council review or council action. Otherwise, it's just using our limited resources to produce more paper.
John Nelson.
You know, I do agree with Pat as far as the quarterly reporting. Looking at it from a state standpoint, not on this subject, but, I mean, I'd find that a pain in the butt if I had to do quarterly reporting on any of our monitoring programs. However, we do, and I'm sure Pat will fully endorse this since it's one of the NIMS requirements for any of our grants, that we do semi-annual progress reports. And I think getting a report every 6 months and in whatever format
is appropriate, and that's abbreviated, would be helpful to the council, and it probably addresses what I was raising a little bit earlier. So I would move to amend or see if there's a friendly amendment to have it as a semi-annual report instead of quarterly.
I prefer quarterly, and to correct the motion, it's a quarterly report by gear, statistical area, and fishery.
John.
Then I'll make a I would move to amend to have it as a semi-annual report, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Gaithel. Discussion on the motion to amend. Jim?
Hold on. Just to address a question that Dave Gaithel raised a few moments ago about the feasibility, I just want to point out that the data that go into this come from different sources, and they don't always come in at the same time. The discard ratio is actually very important, and it involves knowing what's being discarded, but also what the total catch is. And there's a difference in when those kinds of information become available. So putting together that ratio is very important, and I'm not exactly sure how quickly it can be done, but it's certainly a concern. And I think the quarterly is probably overly optimistic to think that you'd be getting numbers that the center really has faith in.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd support the amendment only because I think it's headed in the right direction. But what my concern is that by its nature, a bycatch reporting system is taking sampling over time to give you a level of confidence. And if you truncate that time, you start skewing the data. And a simple example would be if you have a fishery that, for example, has periodic, say in the first 3 months of a year, has its, that's where its bycatch occurs. And then suddenly you look at that in that quarter and you say, oh, my God, this is what it's going to be for the year. And that tendency happens, that the people react to something that they see momentarily and assume that it's going to happen all the time. The nature of the whole system is to take a long-term snapshots over a long period of time so that you see what the actual trend is. So I think it's very dangerous to start getting shortened reports. And we had experience with this on the Observer programs on the West Coast where people would try to pluck out specific samples of what would happen and say, look what's happening. And that's not a clear picture of what's happening in the fishery. So I think we need to look at this, accept this in the way it's supposed to be managed. It's supposed to be done over time to give you a sampling. And so, therefore, I think the amendment to the motion is much better than the original motion, but I think my preference would be that you just leave it and look year by year, you look at what the sampling gives you, because that's what I think is the real shortest point that we can actually react to a picture. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. On the motion to amend, Dave Pierce. And Terry.
Yeah, I appreciate the comments of those who support the motion to amend, that is to make it semi-annual as opposed to quarterly. You know, being with the state agency and having to report often to my boss and to others who oversee us, quarterly reports can be onerous. They take time. They can be very aggravating, but what's new? It's no surprise. We have to do things we don't like to do oftentimes, and I'm thinking ahead, maybe thinking inappropriately, but I think I'm on target. As we move forward, specifically with groundfish management, with strategies that I assume will be very sensitive to what's going on in the different fisheries in a timely way relative to discards, I suspect that's going to be of paramount importance to us as we make those final decisions regarding what to do with the next amendment, that we're going to need very, very timely information as to what's going on in these different fisheries, specifically what's being discarded. Scientific community, the management community must be aware of what's happening to the extent that we can be made aware. So quarterly reports would be useful. Yes, they'll be lagged, of course. It takes a while to put all the information together, and that's very unfortunate. I would hope that improvements could be made to make that information very timely. Otherwise, we will have some, we'll be unable to respond in a timely way to what's going on in these fisheries. So semi-annual reports, I still say the quarterly is preferable.
Terry Stockwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to think ahead as well, and that's why I'm going to support the motion to amend. It's not because I don't think we need more timely data, but I'm pretty keenly aware of the reality of the costs in the administrative process. In our state, we're struggling to implement a number of management plans and data collection plans, and semi-annual will be struggling itself.
Jim Roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One procedural question. Is this motion relevant to New England only? Would Mid-Atlantic have to have a similar motion in order to, seeing as this is a joint effort? That's the first question, then I have a comment.
I can't answer that. I'm going to ask if someone at the service can.
I think you could just put it in New England plans. So.
Okay. Well, with that being said, I agree with Mr. Chairman. I'm not in a voting position, but just my opinion of this, I just like to get, I think Mid-Atlantic's perspective would be surmised in my comments. You're going to get a false reading the shorter time frame you bring this into. I think Jim Salisbury's comments are right on target. You have to look at the fisheries. We certainly need to know what discards are, but if you don't, if you minimize the time frame, you're not looking at the fishery over the course of a year. The observer program and the data that's needed on discards and everything else has to be a trend. It's not a pulse. And the shorter you make that time frame, the more of a pulse issue you make it. And I'll use Ms. Kirkle's favorite fish of the year, summer flounder, as an example. The effort right now on summer flounder is full bore. Jersey's closed. But since the first day of January, the summer flounder fishery is taking place with anybody that's got permits and anybody that's got a state landing opportunity. That is not reflective of that fishery in the course of a year. And there'll be a portion of that fishery that takes part in the fall. If you look now at what's going on and don't incorporate, as was stated by someone, the catch itself, I think Dr. Weinberg specified that. That's going to be very closely related to the targeted species and its landing associated with the discards is something you have to look at. Now, with that all being said, I think there is an opportunity if we develop fisheries that have the industry reporting under the concept of bycatch caps, discard caps, issues like that. Then you need real-time reporting of what's going on so the fleet could react to that. But that is entirely different concept and process than what we're dealing with here. So I'm concerned, or I would be concerned with Mid-Atlantic species, that you wouldn't get the big picture. You'd get a snapshot, and it could really be detrimental to the plan in the future. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Jim. And even though you don't vote, we want to hear from you. So keep talking. I don't think so. All right. I think I'm going to call the question on the motion to amend. All those in favor on the motion to amend, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 opposed. 4 abstentions. Motion carries to on the motion to amend carries 11-4. We're on to the main motion. Anybody have a burning desire to make any more comments? Gibb?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gibb Brogan with Oceana. I think this is a great step forward and moving towards what Magnuson is now calling accountability. It's going to lay the groundwork for that kind of accountability as we look towards groundfish specifically. That one of the concerns of the groundfish committee and some of the other discussion of the groundfish amendment is, will the tools be available to do different management approaches in 2009? And I think that moving in this direction starts to lay that groundwork. I think that an improvement on this may be to look at other regions. My understanding in the SBRM when we started this process was that there's going to be a discussion of bycatch reporting in other regions and that there are some regions that have either real-time or near real-time reporting of bycatch information. So I think that an improvement on this may be a direction to add a discussion of what's being done in other places, how they're doing it, what steps need to be taken in New England to move towards either a quarterly or a monthly reporting methodology, something that can be factored into the FMPs with accountability. I think that discussion would help both the Groundfish FMP and other FMPs that are moving along. Thanks.
Okay, back to the council on the main motion. Any more comments? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? 13-2. Motion carries. Paul Howard?
One last thing, Mr. Chairman. We talked yesterday under the Executive Committee Report number 12, SBRM and Observer Coverage Program using tax set-asides. I recommend the council consider a motion that would ask NIMS to prepare a technical amendment to the SBRM amendment that would allow set-asides to be used to fund observers in order to implement or improve the effectiveness of management measures in all council FMPs. And let me explain. We're doing a amendment in scallops to allow, even though we've had set-asides and scallops for observers for a number of years, we're doing an amendment that we're going to vote on today, I think, today that we're going to vote on. Basically, the way we were doing it was wrong, and we needed an amendment in scallops to use the set-aside correctly and meet other procurement monetary regulations because of the way the program was administered. So what I thought is that we allow this SBRM amendment to say that we're going to fall if, in fact, another species, like groundfish, wants to have a set-aside program to fund observers, if they want to do that, they have to follow the guidelines in this SBR amendment for administering tax set-asides, but a framework would be needed to figure out what percent you want to do of the landings, et cetera. So this would allow each plan to establish a set-aside if the plan wants to fund observers without having to do an amendment in each plan. This would set the groundwork for an omnibus amendment, and each plan would framework the percentages and things like that if they wanted to set up a tax set-aside like scallops.
Motion's been made by Sally McGee. Is there a second? Seconded by Dana Rice. Discussion on the motion on the board.
Clarify the motion a little bit. It wouldn't be a technical amendment to the SBRM, and if the council approves the SBRM, it will be your amendment, so you can certainly put anything you want in it. So I would just say that it needs to say something like include in the SBRM provisions in each FMP that would allow
tax set-asides to be frameworked.
Right. Oh, set-aside, just set-aside, sorry. Including the SBRM provisions that would allow us. Include in the SBRM provisions. In each FMP that would allow set-asides to be used to fund observers.
I think you can strike and all at the very end and all council FMPs. Should be sorry, in all FMPs. IN, in all. Okay. Sally? Dana? Discussion on the perfected motion from the council. Jim Rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need some clarification on this, just as a heads up here. Is because this is actually a set-aside designated to observer coverages, does that classify it different from Mid-Atlantic set-asides, which are now considered grants? There is a significant difference. In other words, is this going to end up, you consider the discussions we had with Mid-Atlantic's research set-aside species. We started out trying to mirror what was the New England set-aside for scallops for observers, that increased poundage that boats got to pay for observers. That was the concept 5-6 years ago. It was defined by Silver Springs as a grant of a public resource. We lost control. The council lost control of the research set-asides. Are you setting yourself up for the same thing? I'm just asking that question so you know where you're going. If it's determined by Silver Springs that this is a grant, you're in trouble. You have very little say. It's a very, very lengthy process, and it doesn't reflect what you would like to happen. I can tell you that from experience. Thank you.
I think you're confusing the two, Jim. Actually, scallops has both. Scallops has a research set-aside and a set-aside for observer coverage. And the Mid-Atlantic research set-asides were modeled after the scallop and the multi-species research set-asides and not after the set-aside for observer coverage. And the way – I think you're familiar with the way the set-aside works in the scallop fishery for observers, where there is this set-aside – that allows a vessel to either be given extra days or extra pounds to help compensate for their cost of the observer program. And so, excuse me, I think the intent here is to allow that same kind of program in other fisheries.
Any other comments, Phil?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm somewhat near baffled. Well, while I understand what Pat just said, what I read out of this is one thing, and what I understand out of it is quite the other. If we put this in this omnibus across the board for these FMPs, specific to the observers, do we have to do the same thing to do research? My main concern is I'm very much in favor of putting research set aside on anything we manage to be able to start doing something. I don't want it to be taken over by the Observer Corps. You know, I mean, I think we need to have a designation of some sort between, if we're going to put research set aside on something, if you've got an observer portion of it and a research portion of it, I wouldn't like to see putting a certain percentage aside and eating the whole thing up with observers. That's a major concern I have. So does this mean when you put this in, does it automatically end up putting research set aside in all of the process, all of the FMPs? Or does each FMP now have to go back and do an amendment to put research set aside in? Because as far as I know, scallops is the only one we got. One, we got some inherent, right?
This is just for observers.
Yeah, but in the in all of the plans, as it's going forward, does this automatically allow that in all the plans? Or does all the plans have to come back to like if we want to put it in groundfish, is it taking an amendment to allow this to happen in monkfish, or is this going to cover that?
This is I didn't want to have to do an amendment. Say Groundfish wants a set aside. The Groundfish Committee says we want a set aside so we can fund these SAPs or fund anything. They would have to do an amendment to do that. This allows them to set up a industry-funded observer program using set-asides, and then you would follow the protocols that are set up like we did with scholars. It would allow them to do that and framework it. So what we're saying is this is allowing each FMP to framework industry-funded set-asides. That's what this is doing.
I think Pat has some more to add to that.
Yeah, I don't want to create false expectations here either. This would only, first off, to your first question, the observer could certainly be completely separate from the RSA, which it is in scallops. But then in terms of what this does, it only allows it to happen. It doesn't authorize it. So you'd have to take another action to actually design a system and authorize it.
In a framework,
right. So.
Anyone else on the council? Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that there's some confusion going on because of the past precedent with the research set aside. And this kind of set-aside would be effectively different from the fisherman's point of view. For example, in a research set-aside, you take 2% off the tack and you get to go out and fish it. You bring observers with you or scientists with you, and you get the proceeds of the catch, and you've given them a platform. In this kind of set-aside, let's say you take 2% off the tack and you'd go out and you'd take your observer that would pay, you would go out and fish that 2%, and the money, the proceeds of that 2% would then be sent off to someplace else to pay for the observer. So you shouldn't, you know, this is not a way that we think of as like, well, you know, we'll get 2 extra days of fishing and we'll take observers to do that. It's not. It's that you get 2 days of your fishing is going to be used up to pay for the observers. So it's a distinction that I think needs to be clearly understood. And I think in each plan, when you then deal with this issue to decide whether you want to do it, that will need to be known. But I think that there's some confusion here of thinking of it as a research set-aside when it's not. Thank you.
That's a good point. Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I'm less inclined to vote against this than I was a few minutes ago based on Pat's comments that it only sets up a mechanism. But I am still concerned that even in setting up a mechanism, we haven't addressed issues that to me would be very important under this, namely things like cost creep, what I would call observer creep here, it just comes off the top. What the heck? We were only going to have 5% coverage. Now we'll have 10. Take some more off. Or it's $1,200 an observer, but now we decided we need some more training now that somebody else is paying for it. So maybe it'll be $2,000 a day for an observer. I think those kinds of discussions have to be had to make sure that there is some kind of checkmate in here, that this just doesn't become some way to dip into the till and stuff your pockets full. And with no accountability. So, I'm less inclined to vote against it because I realize it only sets up a mechanism now, but I'm still gravely concerned that, there's not a full discussion here about where we're going.
Anyone else on the council? I'm going to take 2 comments from the audience and then I'm coming back. Harriet, I haven't heard from you today. And then Jim Kendall.
I think there's, I know I'm confused, and there is a lot of confusion here. First of all, what Jim Rule said, when it first was in scallops, the 2% that was going to be for research, we as fishing people, it happened in Warwick, we as fishing people thought we would have some direction on that. we actually do not, because we were told later that under the federal rules, we're not allowed to direct that 2% set aside for research. So that's one thing. When you now talk about the set aside for observers, in the beginning, it was poundage, and depending on the price of the scallops or any product, and depending on the cost for the observer, maybe you pay for it. The men are still doing the work to turn that product, whatever product it is, into money so that observer can be paid. And he's paid in New Bedford. We have same-day settlement. They're paid basically that day. That money comes out. Now it has evolved that we get extra time fishing to pay that observer, a portion of a day in some future time. So actually, men who are on that trip, we know sometime you keep a crew, but sometime a man stays home. That observer is paid that day out of the money from that trip. And right now on scallopers, that observer is making more than the crew and closer to the captain. Everybody here in fishing understands more or less how those numbers work. So the third thing is what Jim said before. This amendment, if passed, and I know you're going to work on it more, and I say thank you for that, is going to cross over all fisheries. So if any amendment needs a committee and needs representation from fishing, it certainly is this. I don't think it should be committees in anything, and I heard talk about it yesterday from Mr. Howard about that there's probably people that have to be paid, and so maybe you'd have to go to, I noticed it in the regulation, David showed part of it to me, that if they weren't already paid by the government. I can see this cutting out industry participation in a way, and I want to go on the record as against that. There's very little input we have right now as fishing people on how our livelihood is decided. And to have the same people making the rules, reviewing the rules, they're human, and as Jim said also, he's a fishing person, and when this was reviewed and went out for comment, you see a lot more things that you just can't see. More heads are better than one. So number one, I do not want to see industry cut out of the process with and having meaning in the process. And as far as confusion there is, a set aside as far as for research, that set aside is decided by the government. That's, I think everyone knows that. We were told that. We didn't know that in the beginning in scallops when we passed it that day in Warwick a few years ago. And as far as the observer program, it's very costly, and I know you're going to talk about it later. It is a problem, and it's paid that day, and the money has to come out of the trip, whether people go home with nothing. Thank you.
Jeb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. A couple of things have been stated already that I believe are totally appropriate. Jim Salisbury made a reference to days at sea being utilized to actually gather up the scallops. When the scallop industry first began to bear the burden of observer coverage, it was at a point in time where things were going along pretty good and the harvest levels were right up there. So the amount of time spent at sea is a lot different than what's currently out there. So now to catch enough product to pay for the observers and the associated costs that go along with it, and I think Harriet did a slight injustice by stating that the observers are earning more than the crew members. It's costing more for the observers than what the crew members earn, but the observer is not the one that gains all of that. So, I mean, that needs to be made clear. I think most of us are aware of that. I think Harriet is also, but those costs still exist, and that product has to be gathered, and the associated costs with the vessel staying out at sea all runs as part of that. But one of the other issues that I haven't heard addressed, and I've heard commented on, and I'm not going to say that I know this for a fact, but I've heard from various vessels that they've carried multiple observers multiple times, while others seemingly, and I'll stress seemingly because once again this is being related to me and I can't swear to it, but seemingly other vessels aren't carrying these observers, or if so, at a lot lesser rate. There needs to be some way to divide the cost among the fleet, not just by the vessel that's carrying the observer. And I understand what that can entail as far as additional work and additional costs for the National Marine Fisheries Service if they're the ones that are going to do a taxing system or something to that effect to pay this off. But there needs to be another way. If we're going to start increasing observer coverage to some of the levels that have been mentioned, and, of course, there's going to be people who will say put an observer on every boat because it's not costing them a damn dime. But this could be the straw that breaks the back on several of the fisheries out there. Now, right now, scallops is not as good as what it was. So you can't use that as the poster child to heap a burden on all the other fisheries. And even on scallops, like I say, it's not the same as it once was. I think you need to find a way to make this work more equitably so you can get the information you need and that the fisheries can benefit by it and not just bear a burden. Thank you.
All right, Jeff, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Kalin from Portland, Maine, for Ocean Spray Partnership, which operates the Providian, the AJ, and the processing ship Atlantic Frost. And this concerns me without a cap because this could go out of control for us, a set-aside to pay for observer funding, particularly with some of the calls for observer coverage is probably two or three times more than what we might need in a particular fishery. A go-slow approach is something that would make us a little more comfortable, and that's a tack that you're on, and we appreciate that, but this could get out of control quickly, and the point I really wanted to make was I know the Magnuson Act was clarified this winter to say that monies could come into programs to fund fishery management costs, particularly through the sector programs or through the access privilege programs and so forth. Is this SBRM document clear that funds could come into the observer program in the region? I don't think it is, from sources outside of the industry, for example, from our conservation partners who may have an interest in these kinds of approaches. Because I think it should be, if it isn't clear, that down the road, money to do certain things should come from not only the industry, but from some of our partners around the table. So, that's a question, I think. Does the council look forward to making sure that there will be opportunities to fund observers down the road, not only from our fishermen's pockets, but from other people around the table who share some of the same interests? So, thank you.
Back to the council. Any further discussion? Paul Howard.
One more clarification. The ceiling or the level of which the individual FMP would set, whether it be 1% of the TAC or 2%, whatever that TAC set-aside is, would be the frameworkable item in the groundfish or herring or whatever plan it is. All this does, and the intent of this is to avoid, if the council wants to set up a set aside for observers in every plan. It's only in scallops now. That's the only one you've approved. If you want a set aside to fund observers, you'd have to do an amendment in each individual plan. What this does is say you're authorized to do it. This is the administrative way to do it. Follow, the scallop way they handle the money. And each individual plan, the ceiling, how you want to administer, et cetera, will be frameworkable. So that if, in fact, in groundfish, you set up a sector and you're going to give a total catch and you know the landings but you don't know their discards, you might want to say, I want observers in that sector, and they could use a tax set-aside, but now you'd have to spend a whole year and a half to do an amendment.
But if you pass this, you could do it in a framework in two meetings. So that's the intent, is to streamline. But
okay. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Twelve opposed. One, two, three. Three opposed. Motion carries. Anything else under SBRM? Okay. We're going to take a break until 10 o'clock.